Good morning. My name is Carl, and I'm a recovered food addict, and I'm speaking today on the sex inventory, which is the third part of the fourth step, first being resentment, second fears, and now the sex inventory. This will be followed by any other kinds of harms and then the positive inventory. So there's really five sections to the inventory. At any rate, I'd like to begin with the third step prayer. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Well, it is my great hope that in giving this talk, I will be bearing witness to my higher power's power and love and way of life, and that that will be of help to the listeners. Well, this talk is going to be about my understanding of what the Big Book says on this inventory, and then my own experience with this part of the inventory. So first of all, the big picture, the context, the entire fourth step is a what the Big Book calls a fearless and moral, moral inventory. And the word moral can be very easily misunderstood. Moral is not right and wrong, it's thinking. It's not right and wrong behavior, it's correct and incorrect thinking or judgment. So it doesn't have anything to do with behavior or especially with what might be called sin. And the dictionary, I'm going to read you the dictionary definition of moral. You'll see why this is the case. A moral is a lesson, especially one concerning what is right or prudent, which is derived from a story, a piece of information, or an experience. So, for example, we talk about the moral of the story. It has to do with right or prudent thinking. So, the thinking, however, is extremely important. And the Big Book, by the way, says that the fourth step is the key to our future. So it's that important. So this is a very big key. Our sex inventory is a very big part of the key to the future. At any rate, thinking is, as a matter of fact, very important in relationship to behavior because all action is born in thought. So if we can get at our thinking through the inventory, then that opens the door toward changing our behavior in a positive way. If our thinking is right, then our actions are right. If our actions are right, then our life is right. And then we'll be happy, joyous, and free. And in particular, we'll be able to let someone else, namely the higher power, direct our thoughts. So a couple of other comments. The inventory is information only. It tells us what our malady is, and so that I and my higher power together can begin to fix it. And the key thing with the inventory is it shows us the ways in which we've cut ourselves off from the sunlight of the Spirit. Well, what's the process around this sex inventory? Sex harms inventory is what I really should say. The Big Book says we treat sex just as we would treat any other problem. So there's nothing special about sex. It's just the same as any other problem. The Big Book says everybody has problems around sex. We wouldn't be human if we didn't. So the Big Book now makes what I think is a very freeing comment, and it says that the Big Book and the 12-step programs are not arbiters of one sex behavior or conduct or thinking. It says that some people think sex is the answer to everything. We have as much sex as we possibly can. Other people may think that sex is kind of a base thing and shouldn't even do it at all if you could possibly avoid it. and so on. But the big book, and certainly anyone in 12 Steps, does not try to tell anybody how to carry out their sex behavior. That's their business, and in particular, it's between them and God, the big book makes clear. So that's basically it. Now, what's the inventory? Okay, what I'm going to say now is very important. The inventory is not a bunch of examples of our sex conduct. What it is instead is an effort to get at, in our sex conduct, where have we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? So that's what we're really looking for. In our sex conduct, where have we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? We're not looking at the specific incidences of sex behavior, although that, of course, will arise because it's in specific incidences that being selfish, dishonest, and inconsiderate occur. Then the big book also says, whom did we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got this all down on paper and looked at it. So once the inventory is actually done, then we take another action, and that is to make a sex ideal. So once we have looked at where we've been selfish, dishonest, and inconsiderate, and we take each one of those instances just like the other inventories, and we say, who have I hurt, why, what part of myself did that affect, relationships, did it affect security, did it affect sex, then what are our ambitions for the future, and then what character defects arose from our actions. Once that's done, we now do something which is very important and is a indispensable part of this section of the inventory, and that is to make a sex ideal. I'm going to quote here. This is page 69. In this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. We subjected each relation to this test. Was it selfish or not? We ask God to mold our ideals and help us live up to them. We remembered always that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised or loathed. So this inventory, this sex ideal is between us and God. It's not between us and the sponsor. It's not between us and our husband or wife or sex partner or anybody else. It's between us and God. It says we asked God to mold our ideals and help us to live up to them. And then it says, very importantly also, we remembered that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, not to be used lightly or selfishly, but not to be despised or loathed either. So then it says God alone can judge our sex situation, and we let God be the final judge. So when we're putting together this sex ideal, it's between us and God. And so it becomes something to pray about, and it may be shared with a sponsor as part of this inventory. Not necessarily, but it probably is good to share that. Anyway, once that ideal is done, we have to be willing to grow toward it. It says, whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow toward it. We earnestly pray for the right ideal, for guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity, and for the strength to do the right thing. And out of this sex inventory, it's an inventory of harms. Not of resentments or fears, those have come up in the previous inventories. It's an inventory of harms. So that means it's going to involve making amends, which are dealt with in step 8 and 9. But anyway, the big book says we must be willing to make amends where we have done harm, provided that we do not bring about still more harm by doing so. Now the big book says, as it always says, Why bother doing this? It says that the real purpose is to help others. And it says if sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves all the harder into helping others. We think of their needs and work for them. This takes us out of ourselves. That's page 70. Okay, my own experience around the sex inventory. First of all, and I believe I said this in the other talks on the four step, my own pattern of problems that arise from this inventory, come out of the inventory, basically can be put in one sentence, and that is that I am powerless to get love, so I demand love. I assume that other people don't love me, and so I demand their love. Now, I do this of other people. I do it of God. I do it of myself, and that's why I hated God, and I hated myself, and I hated other people because they wouldn't give me the love that I wanted, or so I thought. So that's my basic problem, and out of that come all of my sex harms. I demand that somebody else will love me, and so I misuse sex and try to get love by demanding it. So that's the bottom line for my my problems around sex, and I have I won't go into them, but I have committed terrific harms around sex, particularly to my wife, just terrible harms, and for which I have made amends, and thank God, my total relationship with my wife has radically changed. We're very much in love today. We were whatever the opposite of love. I hated my wife 10 years ago. Today, I love her very deeply. At any rate, after the inventory is done, then I do the sex ideal, and I am going to talk about some of my personal ideal. This is my personal sex ideal. Another person is going to have a different ideal, just like another person is going to have a different inventory here in the sex area. But anyway, I've got 10 points to mine, and I'm going to try to not cover them all. The first one is that I will have mutual love with my partner. And also, this is very important to me, I will love my higher power through sex, just as I love my higher power through any other means, so that sex becomes a way of loving my higher power, just as, goodness, taking my grandkids out to a restaurant might be a way of loving them. So anyway, sex is a means to love, not an end in itself. In my sex life, I desire to be intimate. Sex means to live in the present. Let's see. My sex, and this is important, there's nothing wrong with sex. My sex is to be a passionate, ecstatic experience. I hunger sexually for my partner and vice versa. My higher power is present in my sex. These are all part of my ideal. I have gratitude for the experience and connection that I experience in sex. I love my partner, and enabling my partner's sex response and orgasm is part of that love. And then finally, my sex will get better and better for me and my partner. That's pretty much it for my sex ideal. And I'm very pleased with this. I think God and I worked out a very wonderful sex ideal. So that's it pretty much for me. I mentioned that I did major harms to my wife in this, but I think I can also say that some real big fear has been issues for me around sex, and especially that I believe that my higher power would not be with me in any kind of a sexual experience, and so that I would be abandoned. And that's been cured by my higher power. That's been dealt with and solved by my higher power. It's truly amazing. I basically avoid abandonment from my higher power by honoring my higher power as the source of help and accepting my higher power's help in my whole life, but in particular in this area as well. I think sex is, to me, is a very, very positive experience, not a negative experience. I come out of a very bad sexual abuse background, and so I tended in the past to think that sex was really bad. But I like to read some really wonderful stuff written by saints, as a matter of fact, that have to do with sex. One I'm going to read is a Christian saint, and another is a Hindu saint. And here's what they have to say. This is a poem by a Christian saint, and it's about talking about God. And it says, "No one can near God unless he has prepared a bed for you." What a sexual image. No one can near God unless he has prepared a bed for you. In other words, unless God is really in love with one, and one is in love with God too. Then it goes on to say that God sang a song to me. And when I tried to shame myself, all the more, he sang this song for me. He showed his compassion for me, and he spoke a divine truth. And here's the truth. "I made you, dear, and all I make is perfect. Please come close, for I desire you." So God's desire in this poem is portrayed in sexual terms, and a wonderful way to look at it. Now here's a phrase from a Hindu saint, and this saint says, "I can't forget about love for more than 2 seconds. I get dizzy if I think about anything but the way you pant in my ear." And she's talking about God, how God pants in her ear, using sexual imagery against for the love of God. The Buddhists say something really wonderful. They say that there are 3 moments that are closest to enlightenment. One is a sneeze, another is death, and the third is orgasm. Those are the 3 moments that the Buddhists identify as closest to enlightenment. Finally, I'd like to quote quote from Pope Francis, the current Catholic Pope. He says, "Sexual union, lovingly experienced and sanctified, is the nuptial mystery. Each marriage starts with fragile beginnings, but thanks to God's gift and the creative and generous response, it grows into something precious and enduring. The erotic dimension of love is a gift from God that enriches spouses. It becomes a pure, unadulterated affirmation, revealing the marvels of which the human heart is capable." Wow, isn't that beautiful? Listen to that again. The erotic dimension of love is a gift from God that enriches spouses. It becomes pure, unadulterated affirmation, revealing the marvels of which the human heart is capable. Amazing. The last thing I'm going to quote is there is a French word for orgasm, and in French it's petit mort. In English it is little death. And here's what that word means. The French petit mort, translated little death, means orgasm. It is the transcendent spiritual release that comes from spending the life force in orgasm. So those are just some wonderful things to be said about sex. I think that pretty much is, that's all I really have to say about it. The inventory for me personally was very revealing, very helpful, and it was the beginning of my healing because it was out of the inventory that I became aware of my harms, and then I could make amends for those harms, and then that led to a wonderful healing of my relationship with my wife, and that spilled over to every other relationship that I have with God and with others as well. So I'm very grateful for the opportunity to do this. And that's it. So I hope this has been a a witness to my higher powers, power and love and way of life. Thank you.